Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I am a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. I believe deep down inside that teachers are the most critical factor for helping students reach their creative potential. And so that's what we explore on this podcast. I share ideas and strategies and blueprints. I tell stories. I share some of my big epic mistakes. I interview people, all because I know that, again, teachers are the ones who help students reach that creative potential. And before we get started, I wanted to have a word from our sponsor. Teachers, listen up. If you're looking to lift up your students in a new way, then you've got to check out the RedBird Adaptive Math and ELA program. RedBird bundles from McGraw-Hill are as little as $40 for the year for grades 3 through 8. That's $40 for the year. The RedBird curriculum features the latest in adaptive instruction, gamification, and digital project-based learning to meet both national and state standards. Accelerate your students' learning with something different and fun. Check out RedBird today. Again, that's RedBird. Go to mheonline.com/redbird1 and get $5 off your classroom bundle. That's MHE for McGraw-Hill Education, online.com/redbird1. Remember, RedBird bundles are as little as $40 for the year. Check out RedBird today at mheonline.com/redbird1 and get $5 off of your classroom bundle. That's MHE for McGraw-Hill, online.com/redbird1. mheonline.com/redbird1. You get the point. Go check it out. All right, today we're going to be talking about what it means to align project-based learning to the standards. So let's take a dive into this topic. It's easy to remember the highlight reels of the project-based approach I used when I taught eighth grade. I think about the moment we finished our second mural, and my students were so excited they started to spontaneously cheer, or the moments students asked thoughtful questions to our guests during the immigration documentary we did, or the way students continued to surprise me again and again and again with their amazing blogging projects year after year, or the creativity in their STEM-related engineering projects, or the way they connected to the community in our service learning projects. But for all the highlight reels, well, there are also a string of failures. I've made a ton of mistakes in my project-based learning journey. Big mistakes, epic mistakes. I designed project-based units that were cringeworthy, where I had to stop after a lesson or two and say, hey, kids, this was a bad idea. I tried something and it failed, and we're gonna change course a bit. One such project was the Great Linear Equation debacle of 2011. As an eighth grade self-contained teacher, I wanted to prove that our math block could be fully project-based. After a successful statistics project, I decided we would do a linear equations in real life project. I challenged students to find real examples of linear equations and interview experts who used these skills in their daily lives. It tanked. Students couldn't find those real examples, much less experts that they interviewed. The project felt forced, and the end goal was something that students honestly didn't find relevant. To make matters worse, students struggled to determine linear functions when looking at a graph or to solve linear equations using an algorithm. Now, at first, I got defensive. I blamed my students. I viewed their disengagement as laziness rather than, well, confusion. However, after 4 days of this really bad failing project, I realized that this was a design flaw, my design flaw. On a fundamental level, those standards just didn't fit with a project-based approach. In my drive for authenticity, I had created pseudo-context. In my rejection of cookie-cutter learning, I had turned the PBL process into something cookie-cutter. Now, I want to explain something about pseudo-context. That's when you create a fake context that feels, well, artificial. And your goal is to try to make something unreal seem real, and it just doesn't work. That's exactly what had happened here. I'm not saying that linear equations can't be authentic, but I had tried to make them authentic in the wrong kind of way. So at that point, we regrouped and focused on a problem-based approach with more scaffolding and some time for guided practice. We also did a lot of practice work, and I presented them with short little linear equation-based challenges and word problems connected to real examples of linear relationships in real life. But these weren't projects. These were 20-minute, 30-minute assignments at the most. It was a hard lesson for me in how to align the content standards you have with a project-based learning approach and to do it in a way that leads to voice and choice. One of the big lessons there is that not every single standard has to be project-based. People often debate whether we should be process-driven or product-driven in PBL. But the truth is, I think there's a third option. We need to be learning-driven, or even standards-driven. In other words, we should start with the question, what do we want students to learn, and let that drive the process or the product. We can change what products students will create, and we can manipulate and change and revise the PBL process, and that's okay. At times, this looks very product-focused. As a student in the midst of a NaNoWriMo project where they create a novel in a month, they are going to be focused on the end result of finishing a novel. It will be very product-focused. True, the process might be important, but they're going to deviate from it a little bit. By contrast, a student in a design thinking project might begin with empathy in mind, and they really focus on the process of gaining empathy with their audience, and only later, after working through that process, will they hit on a place of ideation and eventually prototyping. In other words, in those moments, the product comes later, the process comes first. But regardless of which approach you go with, you as a teacher will be focused on what they are learning in this journey. Yes, you want them to create amazing projects, of course. And yes, you want them to learn some of those processes like design thinking or the scientific method or those types. But you also really just want to see that they have learned what you want them to learn. PBL is not a license to ditch the standards or to take a break from, quote, real learning, right? It's not the same thing as a pizza party or a field day. As educators, we need to make sure that our projects lead students to a place where they can master the standards. It doesn't make it less authentic. I would argue it makes it more authentic because there's this automatic bridge between the standards that they're learning and the projects that they're doing. But how do we actually accomplish this? How do we teach PBL when we have tons of standards to teach? Well, I'm going to give a quick example. Whenever I mention our Geek Out projects, which is sort of my form of doing Genius Hour, people ask, well, how do you get away with teaching whatever topics you want? Don't you have a ton of standards that you need to teach? And people assume we have added an additional project to an already packed plate. But that's not how it works. We aren't adding anything. We're rearranging the plate in a way that honors student voice and choice. The key is to tap into content-neutral standards or topic-neutral standards. For example, in our Geek Out blogs, my middle school students had to make sure that their blogs included persuasive and explanatory texts. So the main driving standards that I chose were writing arguments to support claims with clear reasons and relevant evidence, and write and inform explanatory texts to examine a topic and convey ideas, concepts, and information. You get the idea. Those were the two driving standards. And then there were research standards, which include things like self-generated questions, finding sources, comparing sources, gathering multiple relevant information, coming up with valid and reliable sources, quoting or paraphrasing the data, drawing conclusions, drawing evidence from literary and informational texts to support analysis, reflection, research. All of those standards in research, they were able to do as well. They moved through the entire writing process, and there were two key writing process standards that they accomplished as well. I would actually argue maybe three different standards there. And then there were the key standards in publishing, which were using technology, produce and publish writing, and present the relationships between information. So that was one of them. And then write routinely over an extended period of time, both in short-range and long-range writing. So of the big key standards that they had to cover, right? So from standard 8.1, and we were using Common Core, all the way up to standard number 8.10, so 8.10, they were basically doing all of these except for standards 8.3, that was basically it. All of the other standards they were doing. Now, we actually covered all of these standards through this project. I still engaged in direct instruction, and I think that's significant. You've heard me talk about this on the podcast before if you've been listening for a while. If not, there's a whole podcast on how to incorporate direct instruction into PBL. I provided tutorials and scaffolds, so there was support for students, but they learned these standards through the project, right? And that's a key thing. I didn't teach, you know, the information and then do a project at the end. That's a culminating project. Project-based learning is all about learning through the project. But the idea is that these were topic-neutral standards, which meant students could choose whatever standards they want. They could do skateboarding or fashion, history, video games, whatever standards they want. And that's what they did. Some kid would love baseball, geek out on baseball, another one cars, another one fashion, and that was totally fine. Now, this approach that we chose was an interest-based approach to PBL. And so in our case, that's how we designed the PBL unit. By contrast, when we did our tiny house projects, students had to master specific conceptual math standards. Now, they could design it however they wanted. The skills were really open. If the Geek Out blog required reading and writing, there was a lot of choice on modalities in the tiny house projects. They were watching videos, listening to audio, looking at tutorials, things like that. And what we were doing is students were mastering volume, surface area, proportional reasoning, with the standards around budgeting and finance as well. And those were all very much conceptual standards in math. And this was a problem-driven approach with a very tight focus on concepts. And I'll point out that in some cases, when you are practicing very discrete skills, I would argue that those are the ones that we don't even align to project-based learning at all. They just require practice. So for example, I wouldn't do a phonics project. The reason why is phonics probably works best just practicing phonemic awareness and blending, doing some direct instruction and some practice. Linear equations might work in a project, but in some cases, parts of those linear equation standards are just skills that students have to learn. And so I want to point that out, you know, in a music class, yes, there will be a project, which is, you know, the concert that they're doing or a video that they're creating or something like that. But there are going to be standards that they just practice doing drills. And there's nothing wrong with having some drills, practicing some skills on a daily basis. And like direct instruction, I would argue that you can infuse those into a project, but they are going to be their own separate thing. Now, a little nuance here. Even in a project-based learning unit, you might need to teach some direct skills through direct instruction. So, you know, it's really important that you recognize that there are going to be some times where standards don't require a big, long project. What they require is some practice, and that's okay too. Now, how do we connect the standards to project-based learning? Well, I think it's helpful to think about your model that you have and your flexibility. So notice that in the previous two examples, the Tiny House Project and the Geek Out blog, how the types of standards required two very different approaches to PBL. And that's not a bad thing. There isn't one single perfect PBL approach that you use every time. Sometimes the best option is an open-ended topic-driven project. Other times it's an inquiry-based project. And still other times it's going to be an empathy-driven design thinking framework that you use. And that is fine. So I created this visual. You can check it out on the blog that goes with this podcast episode, and you'll see that there's the model, the flexibility in the standards, and the standards fit model. So there's an inquiry-driven model, and the flexibility you have is that there is flexible content and flexible skill standards that you practice, but the standards must allow for students to ask their own questions. That's the tight. So there's the loose and the tight. Inquiry or interest-driven, the loose is that you have content-neutral standards with specific skill standards. The tight is that the standards must allow students to pursue their own interests. The product-driven model is that there's varying flexibility on content standards, but there's very specific skill standards. And then the standards fit model is that the standard must fit with the idea of designing a tangible product. So what you'll see if you check this out is there's inquiry-driven model, interest-driven PBL, product-driven PBL, problem-driven PBL, and empathy-driven PBL. And those become the starting place for your project-based learning unit, but also they become the way that you structure your PBL unit plan. Now, if you want to take a deeper dive into this, I get really into this in the Project-Based Learning Master course. It is a self-paced course. You can check it out if you're interested. And I take a deep dive. It is a 40-hour course. It is a deep dive into PBL, but it's something that you might want to do. So let's explore these ideas, though, of the different models. So number one is inquiry-driven PBL. Inquiry-driven PBL begins with a state of curiosity and wonder. It might be as simple as the sentence stem, I wonder why, or I wonder how. It could be something like a Wonder Day project, but it could be a little bit more guided. And in these moments where it's more guided, you give them a phenomenon, you let them ask a question around the phenomenon, you guide that process, and often you see this inquiry-driven PBL as they explore, you know, causes and effects in social studies, or as they explore, you know, scientific phenomena. You see it in a lot of engineering courses as well. And so the first one is inquiry-driven PBL. And the key idea is that you're often teaching concepts that you're going for, and they're practicing certain skills like the scientific method skills or the historical methods skills or the research method in a language arts class. And then the second idea is the interest-driven PBL. I've already mentioned it. It's the key idea of genius hour, of letting students choose whatever topic they want. But this is basically where you find topic-neutral standards and you have students choose whatever topic they want. And they follow, again, those reading standards, those writing standards, any standards where they don't have to learn a specific concept or topic. The third approach is product-driven. And product-driven is what you do when you say, you know, we're going to film a documentary. We're going to do a NaNoWriMo project where we write a novel in a month. We're going to create podcasts. We're going to create blogs. And the focus is on the product that they're creating. So, for example, wanting students to learn how to code by doing a Scratch video game project. So that's your third model, is the product-driven one. And often product-driven ones, there's a lot of choice that students have on the topics as well. So in those moments, you're aligning it to standards that, again, are those more methodology-type standards. But the fourth model is problem-driven. This is when you give students a challenge or a problem, and then they have to solve that problem. And typically, a problem-driven PBL unit is going to have very loose standards on the skills that students are practicing, but it's going to be very tight on the topic or the concepts they're learning. So the topic that they're learning, the concepts that they're learning, you know, you might give them a problem related to a historical event. You might give them a problem that relates very specifically to key concepts in math or you know, the tiny house project is an example. Designing a roller coaster is a, you know, problem driven, and also it's got a touch of product driven PBL, but you give them the challenge of designing this roller coaster and they are learning very specific standards relating to forces and motion. The fifth idea is empathy driven PBL, and this is when you are using the design thinking process and you are finding standards that allow students to develop empathy. Now, I think in the end, when it comes to finding your standards and aligning them to whatever PBL unit you want, there are some other key things that you want to keep in mind. One of those key things is that it is helpful to chunk the standards or group the standards together. So you're not teaching standards on separate days. You're blending those standards together, and that actually saves time. Another one is that you can kind of teach the concept standards at the same time as you are teaching the skill-based standards. So that allows you to sort of teach both of those at the same time as well. So the core idea is that what you want to do as your mindset as a teacher is to look at the standards and say, where would these standards actually happen in real life? And then how do I design a PBL unit around that? And where is the loose in the standards in terms of student choice? And where are the tights, right? The tighter parameters in student choice. And then you craft your PBL unit using one of those different frameworks. Now, if you're interested, on the blog post that corresponds to this, I actually have templates that you can use to design unit plans that fit each of these different approaches to project-based learning. And you can find all of those templates inside of this PBL toolkit that you can download as well. So check that out. Ultimately, it is possible to teach with a PBL framework while also reaching all of the standards, but this requires us to think creatively about how we teach. It can help to ask students questions like, where is the authenticity in the standard? Where outside of school might a student actually practice the standard? Is this connecting a skill standard, a process standard, a concept standard? Where is the freedom built into the standard? Where are the loose areas and the tighter areas in the standard? How does the standard fit with other standards and how can we chunk those together? Where is the student voice and choice in the standards? For example, do they get to choose their own formats? Do they get to choose their own topics? Do they get to solve a problem? And then think about how those would fit with a different PBL model. Ultimately, when this happens, students are able to master the standards at a deeper level while also engaging in meaningful work and powerful projects. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcast? Again, thanks for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.